Hello, listeners, and good afternoon. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM. This is the second hour. We started an hour ago at 2 p.m. Pacific time with Joe Trolley live from New York. We're now going on to Scott Lemuriel in Los Angeles. Scott, are you there?
I'm here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Just a short intro on the program. This program, for those of you just tuning in, focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, UFOs, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and the world and beyond. We will have only the best psychics, UFO researchers, and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. Once again, as in the first hour, I want to say hello to our friends in Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, Europe, and Switzerland, who I know are listening. Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren, und meine Freunde in auf Schweiz. You can follow us also on Twitter at Ted Marr, OTW Radio, OTW, and also on Facebook at Out of This World Radio. Before we start, as I did in the last hour, I'd like to ask all of my listeners, both here in the United States, Canada, and in Europe, and in Australia, and in Switzerland, to send good thoughts and good wishes and prayers to Susan Miller in New York. Susan is one of the world's best astrologists, and she was on my program several weeks ago, but she hasn't been feeling well. And I'd like for you all to just take a moment of silence and send her some good wishes so she can get better. Scott, why don't you go ahead? Tell my audience a little bit about yourself. I know we had you on a week ago, but there's so much more to cover. And for those of you just tuning in, I'm sure they have questions about what you have to say.
Yeah. I think most people would want to know, first of all, you know, a little bit of my background and how I came to write this book.
Sure.
Which is based entirely upon my actual experience, direct experiences of what I reveal in the book throughout my lifetime, starting my early childhood. Basically, I got started down this road when I was 5, walking up the steps to my parents' brick house in Salt Lake City, Utah. And they were having a normal human argument. I could see their auras for some reason. I expanded in a state of consciousness far beyond a child. And they were having an argument, and there were little red rays coming out and red energy shield between them. I could see this. It's just a normal human argument, nothing too serious or heavy, but this is how it was. And those rays were painful to me. And what that did is it triggered me to leave my body in full awareness, and I experienced myself as a normal, fully mature adult being, looking at a sphere of energy above my head, maybe 3 feet wide, full of geometric formulas, and there were positions of star patterns in space. And I looked at them, and I knew where I was, and I said, Earth, what am I doing on Earth? Next thing I knew, I'm back in the body, and I kind of went unconscious after that as far as what I was doing. When I was up in Washington State, where you guys are, I was living in a place called Cherry Crest, up on a forest-covered hill, mountainous hilltop near Bellevue. And I wanted to find out what this hubbub was about why parents drink beer. I'm 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So I got up one early morning, 3 a.m, snuck in the fridge and got this can of beer. Hopped out the bedroom window and ran around on the wet grass. Got up on the road, the narrow roads that divided the housing development up there. Perfect view of the sky, surrounding forest. And popped a can of this beer. Next thing I know, I'm laying on my back, spread eagle, with this beer can in my left hand, upright, open, unspilled. And I'm looking at this disc-shaped craft, perhaps 30 feet across, 50 feet above a telephone pole, pulsating from blue to white light. No sound. And I experienced a telepathic communication between myself and a being aboard that craft that I sensed was a benevolent human. It was not one of your grays or one of these abductive situations that many people have had. So I was very fortunate, I think. And then there was a transmission, a telepathic flow of information that went on for maybe 15 minutes. And then the ship just pulsated from blue to white light faster and faster and faster till it was a solid white light shot up into space, right up into the stars. I got up, looked at the beer, dumped it out, didn't drink it, threw the can in the garbage, went back in, snuck in through the bedroom window, went to sleep, never told anybody. A week later, I was coming home from a choir practice on a school bus that dropped me off near dusk. Stars were just starting to come out. The bus would travel several miles up a windy road and then up the hill, drop me off at a wooden bus stop. And I step off the bus, and I watch it as it travels a mile or two down the road and disappears in the trees. I took another step, and some benevolent force lifted my head up, and I was looking maybe up, I don't know how many thousands of feet up, but there were two groups of 15 in each group of this same type of craft I experienced a week earlier. And they were in two triangular formations, and this telepathic communication was going on again. No fear, no apprehension, and that I was getting this from benevolent beings. And then these craft formations broke apart and did just the most amazing acrobatics of what their craft could do for me for a number of minutes, and then regrouped into the two triangular formations, then just tipped towards me, almost like respectfully, and then shot up into space. So I walked home, never told a soul, never talked to my parents. This was some decades ago, at a time when UFO phenomena was taking place a lot all over the world, particularly around Mount Rainier, and some of the most startling close-up or visuals of disc-shaped craft were seen around the mountain at that time. Where I was there, I could look and see Mount Rainier very clearly. When I was growing up, particularly at the time, I decided I better keep my mouth closed and not talk about this with anybody. I think it was a wise decision, especially at that time in the world. And what that did is it motivated me to search and seek out not only why I had a conscious out-of-body experience, but why I was in communication with benevolent beings from very far out of town. I want to give one more experience real quickly, and that was when I was about 23, maybe. I was in a car with a man and his wife and their new baby traveling along the highway about 2, 3 in the morning across the desert flats, salt flats, towards Salt Lake City. And the people in the front enjoyed country music, so it was on a country station. And then I get this impression of this contact taking place, and the radio station starts blurring across the dial. Somebody's tuning it, and it wasn't us, and tuned it into a communication between a commander of a nearby Air Force base and a couple of helicopters that they picked up something on radar. And I got this communication that this guy's name, he introduced himself to me, was Manka, and he wanted us to see something. So I told my friends about this communication, and they started picking up on something going on because they were listening to this commander shouting at these helicopter pilots to go find this, whatever it is. And so we pull over the side of the road, and just basically we're told to look out the windshield. So we looked out over the windshield over the pitch-black night. Stars were just everywhere. The moon was not out. And this fellow Manka says, watch this. So we look up about 5,000 feet, and there's this flash of brilliant cobalt blue light, spherical, almost disc-shaped spherical light that was so bright it almost looked round. I could tell it was disc-shaped. And then it shot straight into the ground, as if it would have crashed. And I could hear this commander from the military base telling these guys to go and get that. We won't say what he said. He was quite upset, and hunt it down. Next thing we knew, a couple of, I think there were Black Hawk helicopters back then, flew over the top of the car, making almost no sound, and went out over the desert looking for this. And we could hear them talking, and this commander yelling at him, he said, but there's nothing there, sir. We can't detect anything on radar. There's no wreckage. So then the radio station blurred back to the country station. And we just looked at each other and said, wow, we were kind of on a spiritual journey anyway. And we drove away. This is the kind of things that happened to me quite a bit between my early childhood and through my 20s and throughout the rest of my life. And this has been pretty much an ongoing experience for me.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
I think you in your book, The Say Raise Agenda, could you tell people a little bit about the book? It's now a best-selling book on Amazon, and I think people should be aware of it.
The Say Raise It's spelled S-E-R-E-S, but it's pronounced Seres, as if you wrote it out S-E-Y, say, hyphen, R-E-H-S, Seres. It's pronounced that way. And the Seres were a very, very ancient humanoid race, 18 to 25 feet tall, that were responsible for seeding human and humanoid life and other very advanced races, animal and plant life, around the Milky Way galaxy and our neighbor Andromeda and a few others, a very long time ago, almost a billion years ago. And they founded what is called the Galactic Interdimensional Alliance of Free Worlds, which is comprised of, and this is going to surprise some people, but it's true, over 450 million highly advanced spacefaring benevolent races in just one quarter of our Milky Way galaxy alone. Now, the Seres, after they sponsored this, vanished. Poof, gone. Kind of left all the other races on their own to fend for themselves, see how they can work this out. Recently, they announced they're going to be returning. They went through a consciousness change. Something happened that brought them into a higher consciousness than they already were. Back when they were around, they'd immortalized their bodies, and they live in a parallel dimension on a planet, well, quite removed from the physical universe anyway. And they recently announced they were going to be returning because they had gone through a change where they felt they needed to be responsible for the younger races and try to straighten out the mess that's happened here, especially with an experiment called evil, the negative experience, which was originally put in place to cattle prod people to move and grow to become what they're destined to be, which is a conscious, free, trustworthy co-creator with the source behind all life, the omnipresent living energy that supports and sustains everything. And when they went through this change, they first announced their return in a surprise way to a large body of 5,000 representatives of these 450 million worlds. And just this presence alone raised their consciousness considerably in under a minute. That brought about inspired me to begin writing this book. It started out as an autobiography. After a couple of chapters, I realized that is just not going to work because it dawned on me clearly what's going to be important to most people on Earth is their own experience with hidden truth, awakening to it. What I say about my own doesn't mean a whole lot to people. What matters most to people is some way that they can contact and have their own direct awakening experiences with stuff in a safe manner. So that's where this book turned toward in that direction, and those first couple of chapters were deleted from the book. It was quite a challenge bringing this here. And as you can imagine, it's another challenge to get a book like this brought into existence through a traditional publisher. And that was one of the challenges I had to meet. And I just recently went through the approval for getting this book republished after only a few months. This was out January 10th. I was so optimistic after I went through my exploration with these beings to write this and what it means. And I put a lot of cheerfulies and grins and all that in there, which most people who read the book doesn't bother, but a few that it does. So I managed to get them to agree to republish the book, and I've edited all that out. So it's even a better read, and I wanted to make sure people knew that, because within probably 2 weeks it'll be available.
And pardon to interrupt there, Scott, but for listeners in Switzerland and Germany, a German edition is coming out, you say, in about 6 months? 6 months?
Maybe 7 months, yeah. Being translated now.
Okay.
And it'll be available for Switzerland and Austria and Germany, and let's see, what else is German-speaking there? Something I'm missing here.
I think that's covered most of it, my friend.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Wunderbar, that's great. That's great, because I know they'll be interested in that.
Yeah, and that's something that normally isn't done until a book is well successful domestically. But I got the publisher to agree to allow me in this one instance to be the publisher, and I arranged a contract with two ladies who know about the book and were inspired by it and wanted to do this work.
Wonderful.
So they are under contract now translating it, and it should be out. Well, I'm not going to rush it. I'm going to have them take their time, but it should be out seven months.
Okay, great. And after that, you may consider translating it into French and Spanish as well, just as a suggestion.
Well, that's a very expensive undertaking.
Really? All right. Okay.
Yeah. No, like I say, most publishers don't do that until it's justifiable.
Okay.
So this is going to be unique in that the book will have a German version professionally out there as well as the domestic one for English and worldwide in English.
Right. Okay. Now, one thing I want to explain to our listeners, the Sayre's Agenda book itself, it's written, how would you characterize it? It's written as a novel, but it's based upon... No? Okay.
It's really not written as a novel. It's written as a book.
Okay.
I would say this. Here's what I've done so people understand. They'll need to, and they'll get it when they read it, but it's like the old Dragnet detective TV series that was on decades and decades ago, where before each episode they would announce and say, the episode you're about to see is true, but the characters and locations of events have been changed to protect the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I went about writing this book. So everything that's revealed in it is based upon my direct contact and exploration and awakening on some very deep levels to purposefully hidden truth on the planet here on Earth and how it relates to our fellows out in the cosmos.
Wonderful, wonderful. We have a caller who's called in. I don't know, do you want to take a call now?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Let's go ahead and Tom, are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hi, Tom. Welcome to the Out of This World program.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Oh, fine, Good. Fine, fine. We have on the air Scott Lemriel, author of The Sayre's Agenda. And go ahead and feel free to ask a question.
Say, hey, Scott, we just talked last night, I know, but I do have another question for you. I think fit into your show here real good.
Sure, Tom.
Something came across my mind about this whole idea, this Sayre's, that we see in our media today, actually in a movie that came out here last year, the Prometheus movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw a real, I don't know if it's something that maybe some authors down there in Hollywood picked up on intuitively about this race. Have you seen that movie yourself?
Yeah, I have. And it's, you know, when you talk, that's like what the Sayre's are like, except they're far more evolved. And they're much more elevated if you're around them, the energy. What they depicted in the movie, they had a negative spin on it in that they attacked the younger human race they supposedly had helped evolve. That isn't the nature of the Sayre's. So
yeah.
they're getting that information, which you can get around the world from, the stories about the Sumerian others that had these... goes back in our cultures about these giant humans that people have found and skeletons that are 18, 25 feet tall, sometimes 30 feet tall. Does that help answer your question?
It certainly does. And, you know, another line maybe you'd speak on, too, is just that, all the legends and stuff of giants here on the planet. I mean, every single continent has their legends of giants, and I mean, we dug up skeletons all over the planet that are, you know, giants.
Yep.
Would you say that they are descendants of that specific race?
Very likely.
Oh, I suppose we all are descendants of that specific race.
Well, the reason is the Sayre's have exactly the same, we have the same DNA that they do. They're just taller. And the other thing about it, too, is the DNA on people and the human beings on planet Earth goes back many millions of years, how this happened, has been altered. In other words, the billions, I think there's a billion genomes they've mapped out here on Earth on DNA for the double-stranded DNA for human beings. And the genetic coding, each one of those is a precise frequency to turn it on or off. They're just like switches. And if you know how to do that and you're benevolent, you're going to help people. If you're totalitarian and you want to dominate races, you shut things down to control things. For instance, you shut down the time clock so people that are normal human beings could live 1,000 years like they do in other worlds. It goes back even before biblical history about the ancient human beings used to live 800 years, 1,000 years. This was normal back then. And you shut that down. So that people live 80, 100 years maybe. And then maybe you shut down their ability to have photographic memories. Then you shut down another one that only allows them to use 6 to 10% of their 100% of the brain they have.
Correct.
That doesn't make sense. We have 100% brain, and people are saying we can only use 6 to 10%.
So, Scott, pardon me for interrupting, and Tom, but so you have people going through their lives. They don't remember their past lives. They're only using a very small percentage of their brain. And they believe that this whole purpose of life is, for example, to perhaps work like a slave your whole life, and then you die.
Yeah.
And that's not a very satisfying spiritual way
and,
to live.
And oddly enough, not remembering who you are,
sure,
or where you came from, or where you're going.
Sure, right, right.
And people consider that God's will, or this is normal. It isn't.
Right, right.
What this Lefebvre raises is about a decision recently made off-world, amongst a huge number of races, to finally intervene in the affairs of this world in a benevolent manner, because they've got a new tool to do that can actually neutralize evil as an experiment, or take out things which have been programmed into the electromagnetic field in the subconscious of people here, mm-hmm, to keep them from remembering and knowing things. Mm-hmm. That was done through a misuse of technology at various cycles going back to the ancient past that people don't know ever existed on this planet. Mm-hmm. And this planet is very unique because the poles of this planet flip 180 degrees overnight every 100,000 years. There have been six ice ages in 600,000 years. Mm-hmm. And even that's classified. I mean, mm-hmm, because when that happens normally, much of the world destroyed. The seafloor rises, the continents sink, and it starts all over again. And then races reseed this place.
Sure, sure.
And you think about it, this is a very unique planet because it's the only planet that I know of that I've been shared with from people who really know out there that does this, which means cultures can't evolve past 100,000 years maximum, and they're gone.
Scott, I'm dying to ask you this question. Have they stopped the shift then?
Okay. They have.
Oh, my goodness. I have to ask you this question. I'm sorry to jump ahead on
that
this.
That doesn't matter.
But I immediately thought, of you said evil as an experiment is ending on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Would evil include environmental disasters such as Fukushima?
It would.
And here's something I want to share with you. I mentioned this during my last hour with Joe Trolley from New York, but the radiation which was expected to hit the Washington coast this month is not there. Done the testing. There was a, and I'm using was as past tense, there was a radioactive plume of water, 10 times more radioactive, scientists say, than all the bombs dropped since Hiroshima and Nagasaki, mm-hmm, coming to the Washington coast. Mm-hmm. The last couple of months ago was forecast to hit us. This month, it's not there. The only radiation, they just haven't found it. The only radiation they found was potassium K-40, which is left over from the atomic bomb test in the 50s and 60s. But the cesium-137 from Fukushima just is not there.
There's a lot of things, too, people don't realize is the catastrophe in Fukushima had four of those domes blew up, right?
Right, right.
In Chernobyl, one dome imploded, okay, kind of blew up and exposed radiation out there. Millions of people died from that.
Right.
But that's not true from the Fukushima thing, which is 100 times worse.
That's right.
That's something people need to realize. Something's going on here that's keeping, let's say it's not as openly an intervention to transform this world in an uplifting manner, mm-hmm, yet, but it's underway in subtle ways.
Mm-hmm. They're not stepping into the limelight either, or the spotlight saying, hey, look what we did. It's just
happening. Not their way.
It's not their way.
They don't need that.
The other thing, too, I have to ask you, too, is that you mentioned when we were speaking on the phone this past week that they had helped us avoid 12 different nuclear wars on this planet.
Yeah.
My goodness.
During the Cold War.
My goodness.
I mean, think about these grown men, right, who have weapons like nuclear hydrogen bombs on ballistic missiles.
Right.
Poisoned each other in these two countries in a supposed cold war with each other for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
These guys actually, on one side or the other, it's very classified, but they pushed the button to go to all nuclear war,
okay,
which was prophesied, right?
Right.
And every time they did this, a group of ships, generally three, would hover over the bases here or in the Soviet Union and shut down their launch computers.
Amazing.
Then fly away, turn on their launch computers with launch mode shut down, and never interfere, just saying, you know, do whatever you want. We don't like to interfere in your world, but you can't destroy this place. It will affect hundreds of billions of people in other worlds and in parallel dimensions you have no idea would affect. and we won't tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately for us, or we would have had a nuclear war.
Sure.
So we're not going to have one.
Scott, I just want to stop you right there, my friend. I just want to do identification for those
Sure.
who are just tuning in. This is Out of This World with your host, Ted Marr. We have, as our guest, Scott Lemriel from Los Angeles, California, talking about his wonderful new book called The Say Race Agenda. We have a caller. I'm waiting for the sound engineer to bring up his name, and we'll take your call in just a second. I have to ask you this question about your section in the book where you write about an African-American president who's a good man, but he's totally controlled by remote sensors operated by reptilians who look like us but are really not.
Mm-hmm.
The similarities between that passage in the book and, of course, President Obama is unmistakable. And then I want to go back to Fukushima.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to comment on...
Okay, that's fine.
Because here, this is why.
Okay.
What I've written in this book, the book actually describes how this came about, how a hidden government got created after World War II, what their motivations were, who they got advanced off-world technology from, which changed the world so quickly, which Hitler and his scientists did before the Soviet Union and the United States, from the same group.
Right.
But the book is about a benevolent way to not only retire evil in its experiment, but remove the purposefully implanted implants in people's subconscious, which are terrorizing implants, which means if you try to remember who you were and where you came from, you run into a terrorizing thing that plays across your nervous system. You don't see it, you don't hear it, but you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So you run away. You don't go, because just on the other side of that is who you really are.
Sure.
That's how you control people, and it's just technology, and it's being abused, and it's illegal outside of this world. So that's all coming to a head anyway. A new kind of, I would call it a ray, for lack of a better word, was brought into creation from other higher planes and brought down through the series and brought down through the Galactic Alliance. And one of the first places that's targeted to be transformed, as well as other worlds out there, involves benevolently lifting this terrorizing stuff from the reptilians and other races they control and from hidden government there, here, including our world leaders, for one purpose, because they are not in control, whether they know it or not, of what they're doing. Because if they were, they wouldn't be doing any of what they're doing right now.
Well, I have to, I want to interject something here. We do have another caller on the line. I'll wait till my sound engineer comes back to take Margo's call from Auburn. During the past year, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, they have eight air monitors across the western part of the United States, all of which test for radiation and other pollutants. But inexplicably last year, friends, they were all shut off. And the radiation standards were raised from many decades. It's been so-called acceptable for there to be one death for every 10,000 people. Those standards were raised to 23 people for every 1,000 people last year.
If you were a normal human being, would you do that?
Absolutely not.
Would you do it? No.
Absolutely
would I?
Not. No.
Would Eric?
No.
Would Tom, who called in, or anybody else? No, of course not. But think about it. Who would do that intentionally if they really knew what they were doing?
Those who would do it, of course, perhaps aren't human or are controlled, and
Well, they're just they're beings agenda. That have had this implantation process done to them 500,000 years ago.
Oh, sure.
And they're running on genetic automatic genetic drives, which compel them to behave in a diabolical, terrorizing manner.
Okay.
They are not in control themselves either. So the problem has never been a technological one from races outside of here to transform this planet and uplift it and have everybody come and play amongst the stars. That's not been it.
Sure. I just want to tell, there's other callers ringing in. Just be patient. We will get to your calls.
Okay. Just let me finish this real quick.
Sure, go ahead.
There isn't really... The technology to do it was never a problem.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are advanced millions of years. Their planet's poles don't flip. And they've never been subject to these tyrannical implantation, misuse of technology that tyrants use outside.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the worlds out there are in one organization of a harmonious world. There's a few tyrant races out there. Anybody that believes it's all goody-two-shoes out there is being blindsided on purpose to fit somebody else's agenda.
Interesting. Interesting.
So because there really are. But what is important about this work is to announce to people that a decision has been made. These guys have a new tool, which only works one way. It's already underway on Earth. It's underway amongst the totalitarian races out there, and it's starting to work from the inside out to free people, good and bad, from this technology, because something else has been brought into creation that actually takes its place and will motivate people very exponentially in a faster way to become what they were meant to be.
Wonderful. Well, we have Margo and Auburn as we'll be taking your call in about 1 minute. What you've said today is very, very profound, Scott. And I think on the positive side, it shows that I think we've got a wonderful, bright future ahead of us. Wouldn't you say so?
That's the whole thing, reason for this book, because what's really coming to this planet is going to be so entirely unexpected by almost every living being here. If it wasn't to be done the way it is, which is going to be remove the fear-based terror in people first.
Sure.
Then when people in craft land all over this planet, they're not going to be afraid of them.
Sure,
first
course.
Of all, people will have a photographic memory again, which they should have.
Sure.
They'll use 100% of their brain, and they'll be able to go through the pineal gland, the center of the brain, plug into this omnipresent force, as they should, and know directly truth for themselves without having to be in speculation, doubt, and fear.
Wonderful.
That's
Scott,
how it's going to be done.
Scott, let's take a call, if that's okay. All right, from Margo in Auburn?
Hi,
Margo. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you for the show. I really appreciate this.
Our pleasure.
A question back on Fukushima, and I was wondering, are they detecting radiation in the waters in Alaska or along any of the Northwest coast, Oregon, California?
Well, I have my own radiation testing group, and the California Department of Public Health has agreed to test for free any radiation samples I send them. And so I've shipped samples to them, and so far the radiation from Fukushima has not showed up yet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know what Alaska, I don't think I...
Oh, I wanted to say it was in the paper that the testing, and they just put it in the paper down here.
Okay.
That they didn't find any radiation in it out from Alaska all the way down to Baja.
Oh, my God. That's just amazing.
Bigger than that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like the guys flying over the bases and keeping us from blowing ourselves up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's underway. And these beings, their motivation is not to say, hey, look what I did for you.
Sure. Right.
Bow down and worship me. Tyrants
right.
only do that. No.
Right.
They'll make their presence known here openly on this world, all over the planet, when the time is right. But people here have to kind of be given back who they really are first.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, otherwise it'd be too overwhelming for them.
Sure. We have Mike from Tacoma who's calling in. Mike, are you there?
I'm still here, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, what's your first name?
Oh, my name's Ted. I'm the host.
Yeah, listen, I wanted to say, you know, thanks for all the stuff that you do, and they make people aware, and they make them grow, you know.
Oh, and, my pleasure.
I've been into UFO. See, I'm 70 years old right now, but I've been in the UFO scene since the early 50s, and I want to ask, you know, a few questions, and I'll try to make them quick and fast. So.
That's fine.
Yeah, I want to see if I can keep in touch with him, too, because this guy's, he's fantastic.
Yeah, Scott's an amazing fellow.
Thank you.
Yeah, continue your work, too, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Would you like to ask any questions from...
I'm going to ask quite a few of them. First off, I'm kind of going through the deal of saying, you know, what am I here for?
Right.
And I want to ask him what he feels about, you know, that we're, if, you know, we're living under a false government, which I believe. And then also, I see things, you know, really far beyond most people. And I want to find out about the real truth about Christ. You know, we've been taught the Bible and all that. You know, I believe in God, but there's some questions I want to try to get through with him.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I would like to respond to that.
Go right. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. There is a... And I'm going to have to get to this point right now because this will help Mike. It'll help a lot of people. I know it's helping people all over the world already in amazing ways. There is a word, a vibratory, special vibratory word known as Hugh, H-U. Just like the name Hugh. You sing it out or chant it out or say it silently inside. It was the original thing humans do, and they do this on other planets, because when you do it, it vibrates the head upward basically the pineal gland in the center of the brain and opens a door. And in the pineal gland is like little rods and cones like you have in your eyes, connect to the optic nerve. Mm-hmm. And when people are using their imagination, they're really connecting through one of these sensors there into a frequency somewhere out there in creation and tuning into it. But they don't know that they're doing that. Mm-hmm. So what the writers and all, they're using intuition, amazingly using the intuition to figure out what truth is instead of plugging directly into it, knowing it with certainty. Yeah. The hue was the original sound vibration that was the original word that was used to create all the multidimensional universe and everything in it. Ancient times ago, billions and billions, hundreds of billions of years ago, races on planets that are conscious and not affected by what's been done to people here use that to keep from ever having a subconscious mind. Because when you have a subconscious mind, frequencies below your level of awareness can put things there you're not even knowing it's being done to you. It's just the misuse of technology. So when you hew, there's a protection that comes with this. And when you do it like this, when you get relaxed, chair, on a bed, take some deep, relaxing breaths, imagine someone or something you love, dog, a pet, a person, I don't care if it's a car, as long as you love it, that's important. Then you ask to be shown by your own direct experience, purposefully hidden truth on a grand galactic scale or a multidimensional scale. Mm-hmm. Don't limit it. Yeah. And the beings and situations and what you will need to wake that up will safely be provided, and no one needs to take my word for it. Nobody needs to believe me at face value. But it is important that I put out to them that if they do this, then they'll have their own experiences about hidden truth. And they'll be the knower. They won't need to rely on something outside themselves. So it's done like this. When you're relaxed, you imagine something you love, just the same place you look inside with your eyes closed. If you're imagining a beautiful waterfall or a bird, something beautiful. And then you ask your question, and you hew on the outgoing breath. You. You'll notice it's universal. It'll vibrate the head upward. The yawn that came from the east vibrates the throat and chest area, but the hue only vibrates a very important door. So, and then you just pause and you look and listen. You don't try to make anything happen. Then you hue again. You.
I'll give that a try.
If you do that for 10 or 20 minutes a day, maybe even before bed, before the dream state, when you leave your body, because we all do, it'll help to build a bridge between where you go and in your explorations and bring that information back here.
Yeah, I'd like to try to keep in contact with you some way. And also, you brought up Manka. Well, were you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Wayne Aho?
Never heard of him.
Well, he was one of them that was one of the first, how do I say, like a contactee back in the early 60s. And,
oh, yeah? Okay.
And he gave me a book on the first UFO book, and in it had a picture of Manka.
And what did he look like?
Brought that up. I said, I wonder if that's the same person.
What did he look like?
Well, he had kind of a helmet, and it was, you know, white. And
human?
It just had the top part of him, you know?
Okay. Was it human to you?
Pardon?
Was he human?
Yes.
Good. Good.
Yes.
Okay. We're on the right page.
Yes.
Yeah, that rings true.
I mean, I forget the name of the book, but I had it for about 10 years and I lost it.
It's okay. You know what's more important than those books, though, or even mine? Yeah. Mine, the new one coming out, will have how to do the hue and apply it to safely exploring purposefully hidden truth. So it's going to be in the glossary of characters and terms.
Yeah, and like for me, I feel like we are under a controlled environment right now.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And I'm not sure about the religion end of it. You know, I believe in God and Christ on it, but
you know, the best way to get the answer about Jesus or God or any faith you're in, the truth about how God or the Supreme Being or what people off-world call Prime Creator.
Yeah.
What that really is out there amongst hundreds of billions of beings, way beyond just the people and its history on this planet,
yeah,
or its religious books. If you really want to know the truth about those guys, go through the hue, and one day you will find out directly mm-hmm. the truth about this.
Well, Roger, listen, before the end of the show, if you would give information to some way, you know.
I'll tell you what, I can have Ted give you my email after the show's over.
Okay, and there's a...
Something like that, because he can get your phone number and do that, because I just don't want to...
All right, I'll do that, Roger. Well, listen, God bless you for all the work you do. Like I said, I hope to meet you in person sometime.
Mike, pardon me to interrupt, Mike, but what's your phone number, and I'll give you a call after the show.
Well, I'm not there right now, but I'll give you, it's a message number, okay? It's a 253-851-9095. It's 253-851-9095. Like I said, I'm not there now, but I'll probably be there maybe Monday or Tuesday, so it's a message number. I don't have an email, but like I said, I'd like to...
That'll work, won't it, Ted?
Sure, that'll be fine. Just fine. I'll give you a call then.
Like I said, God bless you, buddy, and like I said... Well, the old saying is, keep looking up, we'll finally find the real answer.
Yeah, well, your lot's going to change here. It's already underway. And by the way, what's coming here and what's been decided, finally, was never about changing the planet. It was how to do it safely and remove tyrants without killing them, but helping them change to be benevolent. That was the real problem all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this thing that's coming cannot be reversed by any power, being, or technology.
Well, we're due for a change. We're overdue, and
way overdue
spiritually, and all the rest.
You're right. You're right. You're right. And it's a pleasure speaking with you.
God bless you, and may the angels follow you wherever you go, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. You take care. Are you there, Scott?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, wonderful. I wanted to ask you. I don't know if you remember this movie. It was called They Live, a 1988 sci-fi movie, where
Okay.
Well, it's malevolent. It's aliens who had ulterior motives, who looked like humans but weren't. But
oddly enough, I know where you're going with that. The reptilian. You'll find out in the book. This mm-hmm. one race who are not in control of what they're doing, even though they believe they are very mm-hmm. haughty, very arrogant. Mm-hmm. They are driven to not be respecters of human beings, even to a fraction of a degree. We look at cattle before it's slaughtered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they do not respect human beings, but they carry a technology on their belt. They can click it on. It wraps an electromagnetic field around their body, warps light so that they can project an image of a human. They're not human. They're bipedal, but they're not human. And if you think about it, if you can get into offering a off-world technology, beginning of the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
For exchange for doing genetic experiments on some people they claimed would be brought back with no memory, unharmed, they lied. And a good president at the time would simply turn down such an offer. I mean, in fact, that president originally met benevolent human aliens, and they offered to straighten out this world, clear back then.
1954, President Eisenhower.
Yep, and here's the thing. If you'd just come out of a war and you're rebuilding the world and suddenly, you figure you got this nuclear bomb and you're the big kid on the block and guys come to you and say, we'll straighten out your world, end disease, wake your people up and invite you to be a member of this alliance, you'll play among the stars. And that general and that president said, we can't do that. We just met you. Even though they felt good around them, how could they trust them? They didn't have an ulterior motive. What if we had no weaponry and we'd be defenseless against an aggressor from overseas or from an alien culture? And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of this planet, radioactive materials and bombs are outlawed. You can't even build them.
That's amazing.
No sane person would even create such things that's harmful in that way. They don't use energy that way. But it's their law. They said, look, and it's their agreement amongst all those worlds. So they said, if you will do this and give up all your nuclear weapons and radiation, get rid of that stuff, we'll clean up the environment, and you'll be fine. Of course, he was turned down. So that ambassador left very kindly. So, well, maybe we'll come back, a little later when you're more ready or something. Wished him well. A few months later, same president met with another group, and that's under treaty, which makes Earth like a Switzerland. Get into that another time. But he met with another group, and that group was very haughty. They were totalitarian. They were not human. They were bipedal. And they offered this guy the same deal. We'll give you some advanced off-world technology, and you'll become the preeminent power on Earth. But these guys did not like the feeling these guys were putting out. And they said, no, being a good man, he wouldn't have agreed to it, especially the thing about genetic experience on people. No, he wouldn't have. But this guy was clever. He said, look, if you don't do it with us, we'll go to the Soviet Union, and we'll make them the preeminent power on Earth. Mm-hmm. See, it was blackmail. What he didn't know was they were already in the Soviet Union doing the same thing to them at the same moment.
Amazing.
And that's where this whole thing came about.
Amazing. Just amazing.
So, you know, they were defenseless. I mean, not besides that technique, they also had influential control over the subconscious mm-hmm. of these people once they met them in person.
I have to ask you something, Scott. There's been quite a bit of flap about the continued violations of the Fourth Amendment by the surveillance by the National Security Agency. How do this off-world group fit in with the activities of the NSA?
Think about this. Would the leaders of this planet, if they were in their right consciousness, any one of them be behaving like they are by purposefully lying to all the people on the planet as a small elite group? When you create the National Security Act, what does it mean? It means you can lie to everybody. It means the Supreme Court cannot penetrate it. It means there are no counterbalances. There's no checks and balances. It's gone. It's over. Mm-hmm. Once you do that, it makes you vulnerable to beings of like mind to come in and begin to influence and control you, who are far more clever at that than the NSA or any of those people would ever be in another 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. So this is the problem. When you do that in order to play with advanced technology from out there and keep the people in the dark about it, you get a small, powerful, wealthy group in control of the military-industrial complex. When Eisenhower left office, his parting speech you can still see on YouTube, he warned people about the growing power of the military-industrial complex. He helped coin and create, lest your constitutional rights be taken from you. That's because he watched the power of the president stripped from him in his last year.
I'll be damned. I do remember that speech, and I've seen it on the internet.
It's pretty impressive. He was really trying to tell people something.
Sure,
the only way he
sure.
could.
Well, people know about Area 51, but there's Area 52, 53, 54.
54, all within that Area 51 ground, yep.
What about those other areas? What happens there?
One of them is inhabited by tall grays, 7 to 9 feet tall. And they're the older grays. They live 800 years. Another fellow used to work out there that's talking about this now openly because right. the generals of this alien group apparently liked him somehow. He was testing weather out there and never classified him. Mm. So he said, you can talk about it all you want if you can get anybody to listen.
Well,
but he's basically just talking about the tall grays and the tall grays, what they do and how they're outfitted out there in their own base. And, I mean, it's open. I mean, they're not killing him or taking him out because he's talking about it. Think about that.
Sure.
Why?
Sure. Who's paid for the base and can we access it?
I think you know who's paying for the base.
We are.
Better have an extra job.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And our own generals and our own technical people are not allowed to go in that base when they're servicing their own craft.
Amazing.
Which means they're giving us their more antiquated technology.
Sure, sure.
And sure. So you get into a trap this way.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you lie and the more you deceive, the more you get controlled by something from outside mm-hmm. who's better at it than you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. Because there's no such thing as honesty from governments on this planet when they have classified things kept from everyone else, that they think, well, we need to do it because you people aren't as superior as we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're the elite crowd. We get to know, mm-hmm. but you don't.
Mm-hmm.
That is the path of a tyrant only.
I have to tell you, the previous hour I had Joe Trolley on from New York, wonderful spiritualist and psychic, and he said one of the problems of society today is that people diminish each other, and especially the elite. And you've
think about that.
Again.
Is that a here's what most people think. They think mm-hmm. that's a normal human trait on this planet. They're so
mm-hmm.
conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
They think that living 80 and 100 years and not knowing where you came from or where you're going is normal. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Number two, they think that You know, when their government tells them this or that, they know. Everybody on the planet knows they're being lied to. Now, of course we do.
Sure.
Every one of us.
Sure.
But they feel powerless to do anything about it because the people that are in power are powerless to do anything about what they're doing.
Sure.
Or they wouldn't do it. So the point that I'm bringing to the show and the Savior's agenda is a completely benevolent one.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody doesn't know what that word means, it means kind and good and uplifting and only constructive. And that the only way this can be done to turn this world around is we have to get massive help from outside. They have to have the will and the motivation and the way to do it safely with no destruction or killing or minimize it down to nearly nothing in order to do it. Because these guys that are on the hidden bases and stuff here now are sore losers. And if they're kicked off by force, they'll blow this planet apart on their way out of town. And it'll become an asteroid belt like circling between the, around the sun, like the one between Mars and Jupiter is right now.
Which used to be a planet called Maldek before destroyed. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And it was destroyed by such a device.
Right, right.
Like 6 million years ago.
Right. But what's different, I think, the Seyre's agenda and the agenda of the higher benevolent entities is that
mm-hmm.
the tyrants themselves will also be transformed so that they'll also find their true purpose. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Which
is the only way it can be done.
Which is wonderful.
If you don't solve the problem out in the other planets that are totalitarian, that sneak around, pride themselves in being the most clever, deceptive chess players in the universe,
mm-hmm.
who think of themselves wrongly, they're compelled to think of themselves as elite over other races.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Mm-hmm.
If it came to push came to shove and there was a war again, like there was 500,000 years ago, the last big galactic war,
mm-hmm.
they were defeated, signed a treaty. They were compelled to do that war from an even more diabolical white-winged race that got into this dimension from a parallel dimension, took them over. It's a long story in galactic history.
Mm-hmm.
Then they were defeated and thrown out of this back in their own dimension and locked there by beings, friends from the Andromeda galaxy. People don't even know exist. Any of this happened. And then this race, people didn't know for 500,000 years until recently, was this race had also been altered genetically so that generation after generation, they would have the same diabolical nature passed on to them. So they would just go around the universe doing what they're doing to get another piece of property, always just short of going to all-out war through
mm-hmm.
another Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a thorn in the side of the Galactic Alliance all this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the solution to finally solve that means they have to have a way to neutralize those changes in their DNA and the implanted terrorizing things in their beings simultaneously with removing it from any hidden leaders here and the whole populace thereafter to do it without the death and destruction that would otherwise result.
Sure.
There are even more powerful beings beyond the Seyres that have to deal with running the mechanics of creation, planets, universes, galaxies, keeping them in balance, that are so far removed. I mean, they've recently got an instruction to, number one, mechanically stop the polar shifts of this planet, and they can do it.
Amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah. And that would mean that we can finally, this planet can finally mature and not have these destructive cycles from what we call Golden Age to Iron Age and back again.
Sure.
That's being done away with.
Sure.
It's not effective. It just keeps people trapped.
But the bottom line, friends, is that don't buy into the doom and gloom, that we have a very bright, very wonderful future ahead of us. And I just wanted to tell our listeners quickly of our guests next week because we're running out of time. Then I want you to give the last few words, Scott. Next Friday, we'll have Mitch Horowitz on, who's the vice president of Penguin Books out of New York City. He's written a wonderful book on the power of positive thought and how it's beneficially helped America become the great country it is. And also Dr. John Lear, whose father invented the Learjet. He'll be having some wonderful words on interesting words on UFOs. We've got about 30 seconds left, Scott, and I want you to have the floor to wrap up the program today.
Okay, great. I know about those people.
Oh.
John Lear I've heard about. Yeah.
Cool.
He's got some interesting insights into things. I just I want to say to people that exploring the Seyre's agenda, I'm not doing this to sell books. It's not my motivation. I mean, you have to if you're going to live here. But, you know, I'm doing it because I'm motivated, driven with a fire for this to be of a benevolent nature for people to explore. And when they do it through the hue, they're going to uncover hidden truth for themselves.
Wonderful. I hope you all, my dear listeners in this country, Canada, Europe, Australia, and Switzerland, have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you next week.